Please note this is part one of a two-part episode.
Please always consult with your physicians prior to making any changes to your treatment plan. Music is courtesy of Ryan Hamner. Welcome to Living with Scanxiety, the cancer podcast, a podcast geared to help you navigate the pediatric cancer world. As a mother of a child who battled a soft tissue sarcoma for over a year, your host, Rosaria Kozar, understands and will help guide you through your journey. She brings the knowledge of experts, families, survivors, and other organizations tied to the pediatric cancer world to your doorstep. Her mission is to inform, support, and promote hope for you and your family.
This is where hope lives. This is where hope thrives. Together as one.
Linda's family is who they need to look to first. Linda's family is who they're going to hand over Sally to. So grandparents come into the picture, siblings come into the picture, and now everybody thinks they know what's best for Sally. But it was the neighbor who was there, and it's the neighbor who really know what Sally needs and what Sally wants. But the neighbor has no standing. The neighbor can't go and say, no, she would have trusted me. Linda would have trusted me with Sally. Linda would have told me this. Linda knew that I would be the best person.
Hi, this is Rosaria, and I'm super excited today because we have an episode that you all need to hear. It's about estate planning, and who better to have than Luby Marthel, who's a licensed attorney in Florida. Not only that, she is part of the community and understands everything about what it means to go through cancer and be a caretaker. She's been licensed to practice law since 2012, and she owns her own firm, Marthel's Law PA. Her firm primarily focuses on family law, estate planning, probate, and personal injury. She's a wife and a mother of four, and that's three boys and one girl. On March 4th of 2014, that's when her second son was diagnosed with ALL at 21 months. He fought for 3.5 years. He finished his chemotherapy on July 1st of 2017. The same year, he turned 5. Since that time, the family has been very active in the childhood cancer community, and they do everything they can to raise awareness. And in part, that's why she's here today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. And I think everyone that's listening is going to be very eager to hear your message and what you have to say today. Why don't we start with the importance of having estate planning? And then later, I definitely want to hear your story about your son. Why is it important to have estate planning?
That is a really good question, which is what I was going to actually start off with. Because in the legal world, we, you know, there's these terms that we use and it makes sense to us. And I would tell people, and it's not until some brave soul says, yeah, I don't know what that is. I'm like, what? So estate planning encompasses the documents that you need to prepare yourself and or prepare for the future for you and the family. Those documents consist of a will, a trust, or power of attorney, healthcare advance directives, a living will, anything that are legal documents that would be able to give someone the legal authority to make certain decisions, either on your behalf or in case you have unfortunately passed away. So that's estate planning as a whole. And the importance of having it is in the cancer community, we're all very aware of things happening that's not part of our plan. They just happen. This community is something we don't even know about, really. Don't want to be a part of it when we find out about it. But we just without our consent are inducted into this community. And that happened, you know, without our knowledge. It just happened to us. So my son was diagnosed with cancer and we didn't plan for any of our kids to have cancer. So when it happened, it just catches you off guard. So the importance of having an estate planning is to prepare yourself for the unplanned events in your life.
Okay. And is this unique to Florida?
No, no. Everyone, anywhere should have estate planning documents done. If you have a loved one, or if you have just anyone who has somebody who is dear to them, you need estate planning. And even if you don't, if your life is important to you, you also need estate planning done, because you want whoever will be making medical decisions for you to be able to know what it is that you, what decisions you would want if you were the one that was able to make those decisions. Do you want them to put you on a ventilator? Do you want them to keep you in a coma? Do you want them to let you pass on? Like, what decisions would you want them to make if you could speak? Those are the importance of having estate planning documents. Now, estate planning documents are specific to the particular state that you're in and who can draft them, like who can create them for you and how they can be done and whether they need to be notarized, and there are certain requirements per state. But everyone anywhere needs estate planning documents.
Okay. I know in Massachusetts, we do estate planning, but estate, I'm thinking you need to have a house. So what happens if you just have an apartment? Do you still have an estate? What does estate even mean?
Okay, so really good question. And that is the misunderstanding. It says estate because that is what they call your stuff when you have passed away. Or it's just a general term, estate planning. It's the handling of your things, right? So you don't need to have a particular asset, or you don't need to have a particular thing in order for you to get your documents done. I often do a lot of networking, and I speak to people on one-on-one, and I explain to them when they say to me, I don't have anything, so I really don't care what happens. And I say to them, you don't have anything right now, but you don't know how you're going to leave this world. Those who got into a car accident and they unfortunately pass, or those who signed for some surgery and it wasn't really a life-threatening surgery, but then something happens and then they pass away because of some medical malpractice or some medical negligence. If your estate, which is now what it's called, the person who's going to be handling things because you've now passed away, if your estate is successful in going through a lawsuit and get some money because of the personal injury, which is the car crash, or maybe you got hit or something and now you've passed away, or the medical malpractice is successful, you yourself, like if Luby were to pass away, Luby's estate would now have this crazy amount of money while I'm dead that I didn't have when I was alive. So now, because at the time when I was alive, I was thinking, well, I don't have anything. Let's just assume I don't have any kids and such. I don't care what happens to it, to me or whatever I have. Now my estate has hundreds and thousands of dollars, even millions, depending on what happens. So you've now passed away and there's this money hanging around and you haven't said anything to anyone in a legal document how you want that money to be divided. And it never fails. People would come out the woodwork and they say, hey, I know her. I knew her. She's my cousin twice removed. And she's this and she's that and she's this. And so now they're going to come after the money. Or even worse, if I've passed away, let's say my husband passed away, and now my kids are just here, and now my estate has this crazy amount of money, which is going to pass to my kids according to the law. Now I have all this family or people who's going to come into play and talk about, hey, I'll watch the kids. I'll take care of those kids for her. And really, they really just want their hands on the money. And if I had anything in writing, I would have been able to have a say-so as what would happen. It's essentially having your hand beyond the grave, having a say beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm. So if I didn't even talk to my parents and I just had, I was estranged from my family, they could go after this if I don't have this and, you know, be in charge of my child's chemo treatments.
Oh, 100%. Because in the eye of the law, blood is first. Okay. Let's just say there's an example where you're estranged from your family. And I see that a lot in the cancer community. You know, it's unfortunate when it happens. Everybody has their own reason for growing apart. But so Luby, who is, this is an example, everybody. So whoever knows Luby.
And you keep using yourself. This is scary.
So I because I don't want to. Okay, so let's not use myself. Let's just use Linda. Let's just say there's Linda.
Okay.
Who has a daughter. Okay. And her daughter is going through cancer, but she doesn't have any family. Like, she has family members, but they're estranged. They don't know anything that's going on. They don't really ask her what's going on with her daughter, Sally. They don't know that, they don't even know the type of cancer that Sally has and however many treatments that she needs to get and her off treatment therapy that she needs. But Linda's neighbor is very active with what's going on with Linda. She knows Sally. Sally and the neighbor's daughter are very good friends. They're best friends. They're at each other's house all the time. The neighbor takes Linda to the hospital and back. And if Linda needs something, the neighbor's the first person she calls on. Something happens to Linda. Linda's going to the gym. Linda's on her way home. She gets hit. Sally's with the neighbor, but then the neighbor doesn't see Linda, don't know what's going on. The neighbor calls the police, is calling around, call the hospital, come to find out.
This is a detailed story.
But this is the example that I give so people can see how real it is. Right?
Yes, yes.
And so the police comes into play and they're like, well, we don't know what's going on. So we just got to call Linda's family.
Mm.
But Linda's family don't really know anything about Linda. They don't know anything about Sally. But according to the law, Linda's family is who they need to look to first.
Okay.
Linda's family is who they're going to hand over Sally to. So grandparents come into the picture, siblings come into the picture, and now everybody thinks they know what's best for Sally. But it was the neighbor who was there, and it's the neighbor who really know what Sally needs and what Sally wants. But the neighbor has no standing. The neighbor can't go and say, no, she would have trusted me. Linda would have trusted me with Sally. Linda would have told me this. Linda knew that I would be the best person. The problem is Linda didn't put it in writing. Mm-hmm. So according to Florida's law, Linda's neighbor may never see Sally. And Linda's neighbor may never be the one to watch over Sally. So Sally's now in the hands of these estranged grandparents, these estranged aunts and uncle who probably found out that she has some money. Let's just say there's no money involved, but they've always wanted to be involved and they just always had this tiff between them. And so now they want to make good, but they just don't know how. These people are strangers to Sally and they still don't know what's going on with Sally. But because Linda never wrote anything down, Sally's at the mercy of these people who she don't know, and they don't know anything about her. They don't know her doctors. They don't know that she needs her medicine at 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock. They don't know that she needs the steroids. They don't know that she vomits after taking these steroids. They don't know that she has an aversion to, I don't know, apple juice. Or they don't know why she doesn't want apple juice. They don't know anything about her. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing the law can do about it because Linda never wrote anything down.
Mm-hmm. That's scary, you know?
It is scary.
There's different parts that make up the whole.
Yeah.
When you talk about somebody taking care of you because you're incapacitated and possibly signing a do not resuscitate or DNR, that's all part of the proxy form. right?
Yes. Yes.
And then what would it be called where you give somebody, not control, guardianship over your child?
Guardianship.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are different forms for different parts of this process.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
The power of attorney is essentially you pick somebody who's going to act like you. They are literally stepping in your shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very specific as to when they get to do that. It's when you're unable to or you're incapacitated. And incapacitated means mentally, you're not here. You're no longer yourself. You cannot make any decision, right, mm-hmm. for yourself or for your family. So the power of attorney kicks in. The person who you choose to be your attorney of fact, that's the person who you choose to have power of attorney over you, they can pay your bills. They can sign a contract that you were in the middle of signing. They can open up a bank account for you. They can, they have permission to be you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once Linda is able to regain her capacity or is available, then Linda regains control.
Mm-hmm.
So this control can be taken, you know, back at any time. So Linda can revoke or remove the power of attorney anytime that she starts to gain, you know, her mental capacity again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what happens. So this is the power of attorney. Now, you also have the Health Care Advance Directive, and they're titled different ways in different states, but this is a person who makes medical decisions for you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the one that speaks to the doctor. They're the one who the doctor looks to say, okay, we were in the surgery, we were in surgery, and we noticed that there's this big, huge size, blah, blah, blah. And before we go in and do anything about it, we had to come here and get permission, because per Florida law, if you do anything outside of what I gave you permission for, I can sue you.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to stop the surgery, say, hey, XYZ, can we do this? Yes or no? So that's the importance of having a healthcare advance directive, the person who's going to make those medical decisions. Those things happen while you're still alive. The other thing is called the living will. And that's the document you sign that says, hey, if I am incapacitated and in a vegetative state or this and that, what is it that I would want them to do for me? Do I want them to pull the plug? Do I want them to keep me in a coma? Do I want them to do heroic acts? That's the living will. That says, if they can't do anything more, what is it that what other acts do I want them to do? That's when you would do the DNR, do not resuscitate. That's the importance of that living will.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that are while you're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
However, once you've passed away, the power of attorney no longer is no longer effective because you've passed away. What kicks in is the will, the last will and testament, or a trust. And they're both essentially the same thing. They just, it's like the same car,
mm-hmm.
but they'll take you the same place. Okay. I mean, it's two different cars taking you the same place. The will, you need court intervention.
Mm-hmm.
to have your stuff divided.
Mm-hmm.
A trust, you do not. You don't need the court intervention. Your things just get divided per your instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where those come into play. Now, when you have a minor, you get to pick your guardianship of your minor. And that's where you would put in your will or your trust, who do you want to be the guardianship of your minor?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can put different instructions. If I pass and my husband passed away, I would like my sister and her husband to be the guardian of my children. I want all of them to stay together. I want all of them to do X, Y, Z. And I have instructions. And I also tell my clients, think a little further. What happens if your sister passed away and it's just the husband? Or what happens if the two of them get a divorce? What do you want them to do with your children? Because your sister is the one that agreed to care for the children, and her husband being a great guy, he agreed, but he didn't want those kids. So if she passed away, Now he's stuck with kids he didn't even want. So what do you do in that situation? So I try to have my clients think these things really through, you know, think these things through, and try to, you know, have different alternatives. Of course, we could never think of everything, but as much as we can, that's what we prepare for. And that is the best thing that you can do for your family, because it eliminates the possibility of the family fighting over your kids and the money. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some people, they're just too happy. They love to just file suit and they'll just contest everything. That's not what she would have wrote if that was really what she wanted on the will. And I'm going to go ahead and challenge it. Some people just do that just to do it. But on the grand scheme of things, you took care of everything. You said how you wanted it to happen. And that's what they're going to have to follow. And then you have the backing of the court to support you. But when you don't have these things in order and you don't have these things written down, signed and notarized, however your state require them, you're now left in the mercy of the law. And the law doesn't look at really the relationship you form. They look at, hey, if there's a husband or a wife, is there a grandparent? Are there grandparents? Are there aunts and uncles? Are there siblings? Are there second cousins? Are there this? Are there that? They just go down a line. And do you really want to leave your kids at the hand of somebody who doesn't even really know them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. Not only you would feel comfortable with that, would be able to keep up with the medical treatment that your child's getting. That said, a lot of people have life insurance, not everybody. But let's say you are leaving something behind. Can you make that so it's essentially done in increments? Or can you make that so that it is only used for medical purposes?
You know, and this is what I was saying about having your hand beyond the grave, okay? Because once a mama, always a mama. So this will or trust gives you the ability to do that. So you can, if you have life insurance and your children are the beneficiaries, well, you would have to change. There are certain in Florida, let's just talk about specifically in Florida, the beneficiary would have to be changed so that it can be the trust or, you know, different ways that the person who's over the financials for your minors would be the one to have access to it. And you can leave instructions when they are, when one of them turn 18, they get one third of their share. And then when they turn 21, they get a percentage. And then when they turn 25, they get a percentage. When they turn 30, they can get the remainder. Or you can have when they graduate high school and they're going into college, they can get this amount. Or you can have if they're in college and they're volunteering somewhere, you can, they can get a percentage of what they would have gotten had they been paid. There's so many ways that you can dictate how this money can be utilized. But if you don't have that in writing, if you don't have that in your will or your trust, then essentially when you have life insurance, the beneficiary is your child or your the beneficiaries are your children. It's just divided among the children and whatever happens, happens. Now in Florida, if the child or the children gets a certain amount in, I don't want to say what the particular amount is because it escapes me right now. They need to have a guardian ad litem over that money so that they can make sure that the person who the guardian of the children don't go ahead and spend the money on themselves. So the court would give little leeway or protection to the minor, but they're the one that chooses, the court is the one that chooses the guardian ad litem. It's better for you to be the one to choose who's going to be the person over your kids' finance. You may have one sibling that's more financially, you know, knowledgeable than the other siblings, or a friend who's an accountant who knows, who understands the tax ramification of certain things. So you want that person to be over your children's money and to make sure that they don't spend it all. Because I know when I was in college and when I got my net check, I blew it within the first month. I was like, woohoo! And now I'm thinking, dag nabbit, I should have put that money somewhere so I can pay off my student loan. So, you know, the purpose of life insurance is to make sure that the loved ones you're leaving behind, you know, is well taken care of. And you don't want to do it halfway. You want to go all the way. So you don't know when you're going to pass away. You don't know at what age you're going to leave your little ones. We all hope and pray to see the day to get married or the day to just are self-sufficient. So you can be like, oh, I can finally breathe. But we don't all get that chance. Mm-hmm. So it's best to have these things in order so that they can feel like you did think of them and you were looking out for their future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really important. And if you have no one that you trust with the money aspect, can you elect to have a lawyer take care of that?
Oh, 100%. If you trust your lawyer, obviously you're going to have to trust your lawyer because you trust them to draft up those documents. But a lawyer can do that for you. You can have a bank do it, but it's best to, I mean, I would say do it with the lawyer who you know you have a relationship with. Yeah, they can be the one to manage that. And, you know, a lawyer is less likely to be influenced by the batting of the eyes and the welling up of the tears.
Yeah. So it's so good to know that. And like you had said earlier, that this community knows, the cancer community knows that anything can happen at any moment. And it's really good to know, just talking to you, that we can still protect our child sick, or if they happen to relapse, utilizing these or this tool, the whole entire estate planning bit. Now, if you can't afford to get an estate planner, a plan drafted up, are there methods or ways or anything you can do to kind of remedy the price?
So that's like a loaded question.
I can do that.
Okay. So I would say in your state, try to find organizations that are out there to help you. For example, okay, so my firm is Myrtle's Law, and because we've been touched by childhood cancer, I have put on my Facebook page and my Instagram page and in my networking group, if you know a family who is dealing with childhood cancer, send them to me and I will get their estate planning documents done for free, because I know the financial difficulties you run into when you're just thinking solely about your child. Look, I just want my child to survive. I don't really care what happens to the house. I don't care that my lawn is growing and it's now looks like a jungle. I can't eat. I can't sleep because everything is about my child. So I've been there and I know the struggles. So I do this for free for them because that's the only way that I know. Well, one of the few ways that I know to give back. There are other organizations, like in Tampa, we have the the Children Cancer Center. They have resources that they can point you to. There are other organizations that has nothing to do with the cancer community, but they're out there to help families low income or who are below the poverty line that can get you to help you, that can help you draft simple documents that you need, really just protection. It is going, if you can't find a resource center or someone who can help you, it is going to cost you. And this part, I say it with extreme, like, I'm very careful in saying this. There's LegalZoom. And I personally, in my legal profession, would not use LegalZoom because they just don't cater specifically to your needs. And they leave you open for litigation. But if push comes to shove and you just need something, I mean, I won't look at you funny if you come to me with a legal Zoom document. You know, it's like, what? Oh, you cheap. And I won't do that because we don't know anybody's situation. But if you can avoid using those types of things where you can just print out or even go in to some library or something and print those out. If you can avoid doing that, I would say let that be your last resort. But definitely there are organizations out there that will help mitigate the cost.
Mm-hmm. And when you're talking LegalZoom, just so everybody knows that's listening, it's a website. So they do provide some legal services, but like Luby has said, it's not Luby. In case you don't know about law, and Luby, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. when you have to be or pass the bar exam and get quote unquote certified in a state to help or practice law in that state. So you're
correct.
You pass the bar and you're certified in Florida. But if correct. You wanted to come up in Massachusetts, you'd have to take the test and pass.
Correct.
So we're not trying to sell you Luby right now. So just so you know this, if you're in Florida, call Luby. But anybody else, you gotta look around.
Yeah, you know, just I would say, please try your best, if you know, for you to try to find an attorney. And of course, cost is relative. Some will charge you more than others. You know, it's based on their experience and such. But and I say this, you know, with extreme caution, it's the difference from how much is it worth to you to know that someone like you is going to make sure that your baby is taking the right dosage of their medicine and know that mm-hmm. their appointments is next week and know their doctors. And God forbid something happens to you while, you know, you're in the middle of giving your child a treatment and the person who comes in doesn't even know that they missed this, that your child missed these many doses. You know, it's mm-hmm. there's a difference to that. And it's take a good look at yourself and see what you can, what is it that you can sacrifice? No shade anywhere, not shaming anyone. It's just, what is it that you can afford to pay that? I try not to put my clients in those uncomfortable situations, which is why, hey, if you have a child who is dealing with cancer, has dealt with cancer within the X amount of years, I will help you with that. I can do it all in Florida. I don't know if there are other Lubies around the state or around the country, but yeah.
And if there are more Lubies, call me.
Right, yeah.
And I'll put you on my website so everybody can contact you.
Yeah, we're doing a call to action for all the Luby supporters.
Yes, call to action. Yes.
Please tune in to part two of this episode to hear about Luby's son's journey.
Thank you for tuning in to Living with Scanxiety. Please subscribe to hear more informative discussions like today's. Music is courtesy of Ryan Hamner. Go.